pagan pilgrimages, bein b'halicha, bein b'chazor oser, whether he goes there or whether he's coming back. It's prohibited to do any business with him. Now, this contradicts, of course, what we had before, where it said that while he's on his way, maybe you can still persuade him to come back. So, right? The question is how do you reconcile the two teachings? So it's Omar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi said, "Kitanya hahi Yisrael mumor devadai ozo." It says, when we learned, you know, that it's prohibited both going and coming back, then who are we talking about? We're talking about a Jew who is an apostate.
What's an apostate?
Apostate means that he throws away his Yiddishkeit and he wants to live like a goy. That's what a mumor. We have different... That's one possibility, right. I have to tell you, we learned earlier about mumor, that in reality there are two categories of mumor. One is called a mumor l'teyoloin, and the other one is called a mumor l'hachis. Okay, what is a mumor l'teyolin? This is what we learned previously, way back. Okay, we learned that this is a person who decides, I'm hungry, and I like the smell of the pork chop or something like that. You understand? So he goes and he eats chayfas. Okay, he eats chayfas, right? So he is a mumor l'teyolin. In other words, he is an apostate because his appetite is such a thing that he wants. Right, pay a month. Right.
A weak will.
Right. Okay. On the other hand, a mumor l'hachis, what does l'hachis mean? It means that you do it purposely in order to, you know, to show your contempt for everything. Right. So that already, this kind of mumor that we're talking about over here, obviously would have to be a mumor l'hachis. He's doing it because he has complete contempt for Yiddishkeit and so on.
What
so,
what
me?
What does l'hachis mean?
Kaas. What does kaas mean?
To deny.
Kaas is anger. L'hachis, he's doing it because he wants to spite you. He wants to spite Yiddishkeit. This is what it is.
They use that word in Yiddish.
Of course they do. Absolutely they use the word l'hachis. Right.
It's used as a noun, too.
It's a l'hachis dicker person or something like that.
They say God despite some of
the right.
I was looking to try to get this. L'hachis. How do you say in Yiddish?
L'hachis. L'hachis. It's the same word, l'hachis.
No, I understand.
You take the Hebrew word, but you pronounce it like in Yiddish. You see, one of the differences between Hebrew and Yiddish is that the tendency of most Hebrew words, not all, but the tendency in most Hebrew words is to be accented on the last syllable. Whereas in Yiddish, it happens to be what they would call on the penult, the next to the last syllable.
Next to the last.
Right. I didn't say l'hachis. That would be good Hebrew. But I said l'hachis.
Yeah.
Right. Which is the syllable before the end. Right. That's a kind of somebody incidentally, too. It's Moshe, right? But what do we call him? We call him Moshe. I mean, in Yiddish, you understand? So this is the nature of the Yiddish language. I mean, as an aside, I'll tell you. Bialik, in most of his poems, wrote it in, the Ashkenazic, based upon the Yiddish. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if you're looking, you know, to try to scan his poetry, then that's the way you have to read it. And this is true for many of the classic Hebrew writers, you know, in the 19th century, 20th century, and so on. It's only later that, under the influence, you know, of the desire to make Ivrit once more, you know, the language, the spoken language, and so on, and the idea that they felt that the Sephardic pronunciation was more authentic than the Ashkenazic. I mean, this is subject to it, right. But this is right.
And in Jewish, if you refer to it, you call it the Ivrit.
No, no.
Well, Iver in Yiddish means actually the ability to read Hebrew. Right.
It refers to the word Mazal Tov or Mazal Tov.
Exactly, right. It's the same thing.
Right.
Correct. Okay. Right. So, getting back from the aside. Okay. So, this is a Bumer Lahachas, this one that they're talking about over here. Purposely. He casts aside Yiddishkeit in order to go running after idolatry. It could be a convert, or it could be someone who is pretty close to being a convert. He lives like a goy, and he does so spitefully.
Okay.
Yes.
What is then the difference? Erp has a good question here. What is the difference, Doctor, between Afikoros and a Mumar? Either category, either a Mumar.
All right, an Apikoros is a person who denies, the tradition, doesn't believe in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, etc., etc. That's an Apikoros.
Oh, so that's very severe.
Right, okay.
And an Apikoros is...
So a Mumar Lahachis...
Lahachis...
But he doesn't deny his...
A Mumar Lahachis could still say, I'm still a Jew, understand? But I don't believe in following this stuff. I don't want to believe it.
He doesn't want to be an observant.
But we have another word.
How can you say that he's going to
ceremony? He's running over there. That makes him a Mumar Lahachis. Okay? But not only that, you have to realize there is also the Gemara uses the word Mumar in a sense also a person who has converted to to a non-Jewish religion.
That makes sense.
Very often we use a different term altogether. I'm sure that you've heard, particularly in Yiddish, the term is Meshumad. Meshumad. You heard of that?
Meshumad, Meshumad is
not
a devil.
No, not a devil. Means that he's become a Christian or a Mohammedan or whatever.
Yeah.
He's a Mishumad.
Someone who destroys himself.
Right,
actually.
Right.
Yiddish word.
Right. It's Yiddish, but it's based upon a Hebrew word.
Right.
I mean, it is a Hebrew word to start with, but this is the significance. Mishumad.
Mishumad.
Right.
Once upon a time, you had the period of Shmad. Shmad had different significances. One meaning of Shmad was that that they wanted for it's conversion.
Right.
Either
it's like a Shmad.
Yes, exactly. Right. Either they forced you or you did it willingly. Okay, yeah. But anyway, it was Shmad. Okay. However, there was also a period, because the word really means destruction, the original meaning, Shemad. That's the original meaning.
What does it mean?
The original meaning of the word is destruction.
Destruction, right.
And therefore, there was a very tragic period in Jewish history that we called the Gezerot Shemad. In other words, this is the times when the Goyim massacred Jews in order to try, right, in Spain, it happened in Poland, and so on and so forth, right, exactly, yeah.
All right.
So it's another meaning of the word.
But
okay.
Massacred Jews in order to force them to convert, they just massacred them. Oh, okay.
Correct. Okay. Tona Rabbanan. All right, we're on line 4 now. Okay. Ovid Kechavim, an idolater, Haholech Liurid. This time he's going where? He's not going on a pilgrimage, but he's going to a Yerid. What's a Yerid? A Yerid is a market.
Idolatrous
fair.
A fair, what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Right.
When I was in Oak, they had like Yarita Suka, they had like an employment fair.
Yeah.
Boy, I haven't thought of that word in 15 years.
Yeah.
Yarid. Right.
In Yiddish, there was a Yarid.
Right.
They went up the Yarid that was going.
Right, to a fair, an exposition or something. That's,
circus?
No, it had nothing to do with the circus. I have to explain to you. Merchants would get together from different areas, and they would have a big market, so to speak. This is a Yerid. You had a Yerid, it could be for various reasons. As for example, some of the more famous ones in Europe were, let's say, the furriers you read, with people who dealt with jewelers and so on and so forth. But also it could be, you know, people who were buying, selling vegetables and things like that and so on and so forth. All right. So here we have now an idolater, and he's going to one of these fairs. All right. Why do I call it a fair? Because sometimes the word fair in English means that. Okay. Usually it's taken more in the sense of like a market or right. something
They're
like that.
They're not calling right. it a shuk.
No, the shuk would be an individual place. A yurid is where many come together in order to...
Right.
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 Didn't it
mean
like in Yiddish to go away from town, like to get
a yurid? Yeah, but that's already an extension of the meaning.
Yeah.
The original meaning is what I said.
Right. You and the
right.
Ba'ad go to the kashrut. Fair, right? That would actually be a
yeah, that would be like a yurid, that's
right.
correct.
You have a couple of
right.
hundreds. Of
except that we have another, we have a fancy word for that, we could call it taruha,
wow,
an exposition.
That's very fancy. That's true.
Looking for fancy words.
That is
$100. Okay.
Right, okay.
All right, so he's going. So, all right, so the Gemara says, bein bahalicha, bein bachazora muta. Whether the guy is going there or whether he's coming back, you are permitted to do business with him. All right, so far so good. And how about the next sentence? Yisrael ha'alecha yirid. If a Jew is going to the yirid, then ba'alicha mutar, b'chazara also. He says, when he's going, you could still do business with him, but if he's coming back from the yirid, you cannot. And the Gemara now asks, Maishlo Yisrael. So tell me, why should a Jew be different than the idolater, Dibachazora Asur, that when he comes back you are prohibited from doing business with him? Right? So the answer that they give is, the Amre, people say, Avodas Kechodim Zabin. You know what he did? He was selling a getchke over there.
Mm-hmm.
An idol, that's why he went to it, in order to do business selling getchkes. I hate to
getchke.
Tell you that they were Jews, you know, getchkes.
No, I don't, you.
Statue, statue. An idol.
An idol. That's
all
a
right,
getchke.
Okay.
This is good Yiddish.
It's
good Yiddish.
A baby here doesn't know Yiddish.
Well,
that's all right.
That's
I'm giving you an education.
You
what do you want?
I'm
giving you an education.
All of you.
What
I'm telling you, I've learned many expressions.
What is the statue?
A statue? Yeah, I can also say a getchke.
Yeah, but as opposed to, let's say, a religious statue.
Yeah. Well, I guess it implies that it's a religious statue. Because what is it? It's really from the word God. You understand?
Oh,
the basic,
like a little god, like a...
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. So this is,
yeah,
I guess...
It would be like the Russian chachka, like Russian...
I don't know what a little chachka would be when you say that.
That really is huge, because you have the... In Russian, is it diminutive? No?
Yeah.
It could be.
It could be.
Huh? Actually, the suffix removes some respect.
Yeah, right.
There are other
diminutives. As we would say, either diminutive or we would say make a pejorative.
It's a pejorative.
Tonight we're exercising our big vocabulary. Okay. So the question is, so Taka, why the guy you say it's all right, but a Jew? All right, when he's going there, it's still all right. But how about why, when he comes back, is it prohibited? Right? And why is the Jew different? Then the Chazorah also, right, that when he returns, it's prohibited. So it's the Amrei, as we said, Avedus Kochovim Zabin, right? He sold a getchke over there, sold an idol. And the May Avedus Kechovim Ikabahade. And guess what? He still has in his pocket the money that he got for selling the getchke. Okay? So far, so good. Right?
Oh, so that way you can't do business with
right.
it, so you'll be getting
all right.
Money.
Now, I have to add one word from Rashi. Okay? Top of the page. Rashi. Okay? Yirid. You see over there? All right. First of all, what does he say? What is the Yirid?
Shuk.
Shuk. That's the word that you wanted to ask before. Yeah. It's a market. Shall avedas kechadim. In other words, we're not talking about that, you know, they're there in order to sell furs or to sell vegetables or whatever it may be, you understand? But we're talking about a fair where specifically they're selling idols.
Okay? All right. That's why I have a memory of the word in Yiddish as also being a pejorative.
Yeah.
Yerid. So gain of the Yerid was not a good thing to do.
Yeah, but nevertheless.
Well, I remember it.
Yeah, maybe you have a memory of that.
Yeah,
on the other hand, for the average person,
you can say that
means simply that this is the business. He goes in order to do business at the Yerid.
The way my grandparents would have used the word, it was a pejorative. The way I understood it.
All right. Right.
It's funny now that you say that that's what it is.
Well, how else would you say going on a trip in Yiddish? That's what I'm saying. No, but that's not so. It means you're going out of town. That's what it means.
Okay. Doesn't really. All right. I told you what it means, but that's all right.
Everybody has their own
right. Exactly. Right. We all look at it from our own associations. Okay. All right. Right.
My grandparents were listening.
All right. All right. So what did we say about the Jew? The Jew, you say, he sold a getchka and he still has that money from the sale of the getchka in his pocket, right? He still has it with him. Bahadeh means with him. Okay? And naturally, what's involved is what? That when you deal with Aveda Zora, the Torah says, Shakes the Shakseno, you should despise it absolutely. Kicherem hu, because it's like something that should be condemned completely, and so on. So that applies also then. If you, as a Jew, sell Aveda Zora, you're not allowed to have any benefit from it either. Okay? So now they want to know, what about a goy?
What about a goy?
So Eved Kechovim, so they say a goy name, also. Namor that we could say the Avedis Kechovim Zavim, right? And the May Avedis Kechovim Yikabadei, we could say the Goy also sold a Agechka, and he also has the money from the sale of the idol on him, right? So, how do we
resolve
that particular problem? Okay? So, they come up with a very ingenious the solution to the problem, which doesn't necessarily follow, but it's still ingenious, okay? They say, Ella, but the Oved Kechavim, the Goy, he says, Amin, in his case, we can say, Glima Zabin, Hamra Zabin. Well, he went to the Yerid not to sell getchkes, did what? But to sell clothing, right? Cloak, literally. Sell clothing, or to sell wine over there, or maybe a donkey, because the word chamra could have both meanings. And Aramaic. It could mean either a donkey, or it could mean wine. Okay. So they went over there for that person. Wine, yeah. Chamra is also wine. In Aramaic, I'm not talking to Hebrew.
All right.
Talking about Aramaic. Pardon me?
Can chamra be used for material goods?
Chamor? No. You're thinking maybe the word Chomer, which has a similar root.
Right.
Chomer is, that's material matter or something like that.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, in other words, the guy didn't go to sell getchkes, we would say. He went over there in order to sell something else. So now we say, Nu Yisrael Name, how about a Jew? Couldn't we Neymar also say, right? Neymar Emor, we could say what? Galima Zabin, Hamra Zabin, right? That he went there in order to sell clothing, or he went there in order to sell whichever meaning you want to give to the word Hamra, wine, or
whatever,
donkey, whatever it is, right? So they say, no. You know why? Because Yiso, the Abale, the Hoche, Hamas Ben May. says, because if the Jew had a donkey or wine or cloak to sell, he wouldn't schlep to the original.
Exactly.
He'd do locally.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah, that's a good question. Why not?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, maybe they're going to pay better prices than
Jews. Sure,
why should people get?
You know, this reminds me. Today I don't like to go to the shuk, the Arab shuk on the way to the Kotel. You know, people used to go in, you know, going through Shar Yafo, and you pass by all the Arab stores first. Right. And, you know, you see the Arabs, what are they selling? They'll sell you crosses, they'll sell you yarmulkes, zuzus, you name it. Everything is for sale. And I'm sorry to say that there were Jews who lost it. They'll sell you crosses, right?
I
haven't seen it.
No. I didn't see the Jews doing
that. I've seen it. I've seen them on jewelers and so on. I mean, they'll do it inside, right? I'm pretty sure that the Rehov Yafo, for example, I've seen something like that. You know, you have cheapy places over there. Right.
Because
they're looking
for
the customers.
Right, the Mitrafo. Maybe you're right.
So you can't justify somebody selling religious articles to goyim, making a profit, right?
Right.
It's not a proper business for a Jew to be in that business.
Well, you really have to ask yourself: is it right is it right for a Jew to sell these things? Of course. Of course they do. But you have to ask yourself: is it right for? Of course, I understand. That's what I said before. Today they sell you statues of Buddha or something like that. Later. You find Buddhas at Jewish homes. Now before we said that if the goyim are coming back from their tafers or their pilgrimages, right, then you can do business with them, right? So now Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, said, "Lei shonu ela shein kishur and zibazer." He says, "Now, what do you know what we're talking about?" We're talking about if they come back as individually. In other words, you know, this one goes this one goes that way, and so on and so forth. But, he says, about Shor and Sebasev, if they come back as a group, then in that particular case, he says, Asurin, then it's prohibited to do business with them. Why? Because Emo Datel Asur, because my thoughts then, what I say is that they have the intention of going back again to the place of idolatry. In other words, if they make a pilgrimage, they may be so enticed by it that they'll do it again.
So this is going.
Jews are prohibited to do business with them.
Or buy from goyim.
Right.
On the way back.
To do business with them. Right, exactly. Okay.
Wait, these are goyim that are coming back in a group?
Yes. Yeah. Before we said that idolaters who go, the tarfa shalahem, right? That on their way, it's one thing. But if they come back already, then it's permitted to do business, right?
For goyim.
Right.
All right, yeah, I see.
Right.
But they come back in a group, then you feel
like it says Baalicha. It's also
why do we care?
Because the Aslam made on me. The reason why we said that it's prohibited to do it when they were going there is that they'll be very happy that they do business from the Jew.
Right.
And they have the money and they dedicate it to their idol. This we learned a long, long time ago.
Right.
I mean,
coming back
right.
I guess they figured that maybe they'll turn around and go back again. That's the only logical answer.
The Jew is standing by the roadside.
Yeah.
The goyim are going on a pilgrimage.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And he's got things to sell. I don't know what his clothes or whatever.
Right.
Is,
yeah.
All right. he sell it to them on the way? He's not allowed to sell it. He's allowed to sell it on the way there.
No, the other way around.
Okay.
I'm not talking about the Jew buying. I'm sorry, he's selling stuff to the goyim.
He was selling stuff to the goyim.
Well, a long, long time ago, we learned, why is it prohibited several days prior to their major festivals that you can't do any business with them? And we learned from
that.
That one of the major reasons is that if he'll go and he'll do business, whether it's acquiring something or whether it's selling something, but he'll go and he'll be very grateful to his idol and say, I did good business. And he'll thank his idol for it.
So what is this? What are they trying to tell you here?
Trying to tell you, number one, that on the previous page, said that when they go there, don't sell them. We're talking about going to their pilgrimage because they're going to give thanks to their idol that they did business with the Jew. Okay? They made a profit. Or they got something good, you know, at a bargain price. Something like that. You understand?
Okay.
And they'll praise their idol. They'll say, it's the idol that made me lucky enough to do this business. So that's what we were trying to avoid. Okay? When we said that Ba'alicha, when they're going over there, it should be prohibited. But coming back, we said if they're coming back from their pilgrimage, so okay.
But now it says if they're coming back in a group, it's not okay. And
right.
The reason for that
would be that if there's a group, then undoubtedly the reason is that they want to continue to go and make another pilgrimage. Whereas as individuals, they would go home and father. Don't have the same situation.
So the conference is still going on.
Exactly.
You said we're prohibited from doing any business with 3 days before a yontif.
But here we're not talking about a yontif. We're talking about the pilgrimage. A pilgrimage could be any day in the week that they decide. You reach church notices that they have a novena for this one, for that one, and so on and so forth. Whatever a novena is.
I always thought of pilgrimage.
From Yiddish, should say anovene.
Pilgrimage.
Able anovene.
Our pilgrimage is done on Yantip, right?
How do we know it's a pilgrimage in this thing and not a yarid, not a fair? When they come back in a group?
Because they're two different words. One is tarfos, and we know that definitely why have they gone there? Obviously, they testified to the fact that they went to pay a pilgrimage to their idol. The Yarid is a market, but what are they selling over there? So as Rashi said, that's why I said, you know, take a look at the Rashi on the top of the page and you see that this happened to be a Yarid of Avodah Zarah. They were selling Getchkes over there.
Reference to a bear, and then also all of a sudden you're talking about a pilgrimage, but you're not a bear anymore. But I don't understand that.
Yeah, I have the same question, Doctor. Reish Lokish, this is Losh Shana, Losh Ein, Kishurin, Zevazet.
Right.
Are they talking Kishurin, Zevazet by Yarid or by.
I would say it's coming back for the Tarfos.
Okay.
I would say
that's just your
This is the way I understand.
All right.
So now we come to a new business. And this time, we're talking about the Mishnah speaks about nodos, or if they kachovim and kankadehem. Nodos, as we know, these are wine flasks which are made of leather, right? And the kankanehem, these are like small jars or something like that. Okay. What about that?
Right.
Don't look at the container, but look what's inside of it. Okay.
Right.
So Tonar Rabbanim. So now we have a tesefta that's quoted. It says, no dose of the kachovim, gerudim, chadoshim, mutarim. All right. You buy a flask from a goy, right? An idolater again, right? And this flask, I mean, you know, this this leather flask, okay? That's what the note is, remember, okay? Is the Gerudim and the Chadoshim. What is Gerudim? Gerudim means that they are smooth and they are brand new. Okay?
But
okay, we understand that so far. So it says Mutarim. So in other words, for a Jew, it is permitted to use this if it's brand new and smooth. Yishanim, however, if it's an old flask, okay, I'm using the word flask simply not to say an old skin, whatever you want to call it, okay?
Alright.
If it's old, umezuk parfim, and it also, it has zephyrs inside. Zephyrs is tar or pitch or something like that. Call it pitch, okay? What do they do? They put it inside in order to line it, in order to make it waterproof.
Right.
Okay. So if it is old and there's pitch on the inside, then asurin, they are prohibited. Then it says, Oyvet Hechavim, an idolater, if Rivavon the Ibdan, if he poured and fixed them up, the Nasan the Sochan Yayin, and then what did he do? He put wine into it. In other words, first he prepared this flask, and then he put wine in it. Okay? But we have to say, what kind of wine did he put in? Because it says, for Yisrael Omid al Gabov, and the Jew is standing there right on top of him, then obviously what kind of wine would it have to be? It have to be Jewish wine, right? Because this is what we're worrying about. Okay? So, the Jew is there, and he's putting in Jewish wine. So, ain't it choshesh? Then he doesn't have to worry, you know, about using this flask. Okay?
Which flask are we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know.
The skin.
Yeah,
we're talking about
is
skin.
Is it new or old, or is it...
We said if it's brand new.
Yeah.
Okay?
If it's brand new,
we don't
no
have
problem.
To worry. But what do they do after they
use
make
it.
This? Right. So... They have to put in the pitch in order to make it water.
Well, they would have to do that when it's new, right?
No. There are two different things.
Yeah, right.
If it's new, it's
they're old.
It's old.
Right,
it's
they're new and they're old. Okay.
And then Herb's question is, the artisan, whoever who's preparing it, with the Jewish supervisor, is he doing this to a new or to an old flask?
I have to tell you that he's doing it to a new one.
He's doing it to a new one.
Because what does he want to do?
He wants
to make it waterproof, and so he puts the pitch inside.
So he's putting pitch into the new one.
Right. And not only that, but what does he do then in order to sort of like age it or something like that?
He pours wine into it,
okay? That's what we're saying. Right? He then added wine into it. The Israel Oymid al Gabov, and the Jew is standing there watching what he's doing, right? So, in a choshesh, Jew does not have to be worried about this.
Because he's supervising, right? He's the Mashkiah.
Right. Right? Ki Yisrael Oymid al Gabov, my Hava. So we say, okay, inasmuch as the Goyim puts wine, the Goy puts wine into it while a Jew is standing there right on top of him. So what? Right? So Omar Rapapa said that, you have to understand this better. He says, Hochiko Omar. This is really what he's trying to say. Says, Oy veit kechavim, ribavon the yibdon, right? The guy is there, he's preparing it. The Israel nation, the seichen yain, and it's the Jew who puts wine in, not the guy, right? But the Jew puts the wine inside.
Okay.
The Israel achir, not only that, but there's another Jew who is Eimed al Gabov, who's there standing over there to watch the first Jew in the guy.
Yeah, a witness.
Okay. Then in that particular case, the Yedi Choshesh, then you don't have to worry about it. because every, you know, the two Jews together are testifying, right? Correct.
Now, but is the wine here only being used to treat the flask, or are we worried about the wine?
The wine, well, that's a question, because obviously, first of all, we would have to say it needs a little bit wine in order to age it, but it needs only a little bit wine.
Right.
Okay? However, once we started to use it, they pour in wine. So the question is, you know, are you permitted to use this wine or not?
Right.
So that's why we say you have to have a Jew over there,
Jew
and not only that, but a Jew is looking at another Jew. Okay.
Well, that's in line with the fact that only a Jew should touch Jewish wine. Anyway.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
So the guy must not be
poured during the pouring. Right. Good point. Good point. Yeah, that's all to add up there.
Right. I mean, here we're talking about other flasks of wine, but in reality, I mean, the situation also could apply to the making of wine today.
Exactly.
I mean, what is the difference between the wine that's made by Chmez Gallo, let's say, as compared to Kedem?
Right.
The fact that the Kedem has the supervision, there are Jews standing by. Not only that, but for Kedem, they insist that only Jews touch and handle it.
So does this have anything to do with the fact that if you have a guy, let's say, sitting at your seder, you're not allowed to send it, he's not allowed to pour the wine for you. Does that have anything to do with it?
Well, as I said, I mean, this goes back to what we learned for several weeks about the difference between wine and mevushal. Remember, we said what the mevushal, even though there's a minority opinion that says, you know, that you shouldn't even let a guy handle mevushal, but the majority opinion is that you can. Okay? They can.
Oh, really?
Right. So mevushal, you can. Of course, you want to be very strict, so you won't do it, but nevertheless,
right,
it is permitted. Okay?
And we learned that most of the wine they're putting out today is mevushal.
Today, most wine is correct. Not all, but most. It's correct. Okay? If you're in Eretz Yisrael, I can have wine which is not mevushal. I'm not talking about Carmel or any of the commercial brands. In Yerushalayim, they have very small wineries that cater strictly, you know, to the from people. Okay? So there, it doesn't have to be mevushal. But, you know who makes it, and you know to whom he sells it, and who's using it, you see. Right.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, say hello to Sarah. Looking forward to seeing her.
No, she's coming to the airport.
Oh, you're going to be here now?
Yes.
Yes.
This will be the last peaceful day we've had for a long time.
Right.
Have a safe trip.
Right. At the what?
At some kind of celebrations of high caliber.
If you're talking about, for example, a wedding, let's say, at Decatur's or something like that, or a kiddush or something. What?
I mean, where there are waiters that have to pour wines.
He uses only mevushal. That's the answer.
Well, how long is this mevushal thing? Now, you know that years ago when we had our functions, we were told very clearly not to have grape wine at our weddings and the bar mitzvahs that I had. We only used the cherry wine.
Yeah. Well, the business of mevushal goes back a couple of thousand years. However,
it wasn't common. Right.
Jews made their own wine as a general rule.
Very clearly.
Right.
I remember that.
And,
so
you know, they didn't bother with
the grape wine.
I heard also that
there are those who say that a Jew who is not a Shomer Shabbos is in the same category as a goy in this case. Right?
What? What's this?
Yeah. We're not talking about mevushal.
Yeah.
But if it were not mevushal wine, wine which is not mevushal, then in that particular case, there are those who say that a person who is not a Shomer Shabbos, if he touches it, he pours. If he pours that wine,
the Jew is not Shomer Shabbos.
Right. And in that particular case, It's as if it were a goy who were pouring.
Oh, really?
But that's an extreme position.
Well, I don't have to tell you, but in order to avoid that, this is the reason why we serve the kosher. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. At one time during the kiddushes, they would, I don't know whether it had anything to do with that, but all the wine was poured in glasses.
Yeah.
They didn't have a bottle.
Right.
They poured all in glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but they don't know.
What if a non-observant, let's say, parent gives the child who is observant a very expensive bottle of normal wine?
Yeah.
Sealed. Does it have a new rule?
You know, like in any, do you want to shame the parent? Well, you don't want to shame the parent. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Shalom
bias. Right, right.
Shalom
bias. You know, sometimes we have to look the other way in order to shalom bias, whatever that may be. You have to consider that too.
Nope.
This is already, you know, a judgment call. Okay.
All right, so
let's continue a little bit further over
here.
The
wine being poured by the Jew into this flask,
right.
The Goyish flask, a brand new one, that's lined with pitch, and he's got a supervisor, another Jew watching him.
And another Jew is watching the whole deal, right?
Okay.
Supervising.
So why does he need another Jew to watch him?
So, the Gemara wants to know that. It says, Lomeli, what do I need the second one?
Yeah.
Right. Isn't that the same as having a mashgiach?
He's his own mashgiach.
Okay.
You don't have a mashgiach at home, do you?
Right. The Jew is watching. Okay. Another Jew is watching. Why do I need two Jews? So the answer they give is that Dilma agav tirda minaseh. You know what? Maybe if only one Jew were there, right? Then in that particular case, what would happen? He was busy with something, his mind is on something else, and the guy, you know, would take it and pour some wine out as a libation to his Aved Zora, right? The Lavadate, and the Jew who is there isn't even aware of it.
You mean he would take some of the Jewish wine?
Yeah.
But not from the flask, but he just take it?
Well, it could be from the flask or something, and simply pour out it. But we don't say that he has to pour out a lot. Take a little drop of it.
Right, so
in order to be sure that the goy hasn't done it, because, you know,
the number one is
too busy, right, to watch every minute, so, okay, right.
So the shomer is there to watch.
So the shomer is there, right, exactly, the right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, that's similar to the laws that had to do with treatment by a doctor that is not Jewish and it's got to be... somebody.
Right, to make sure that there's no monkey business going on over there. Exactly.
Same idea.
Yeah. Rav Zvi, he says, Le'elom kidekamret miyakore, he says, really, the rule is, as we said before, the hocha b'yidah the koshadeh le'y naseh kisarek b'ayim l'tit. And maybe we can say that when he pours in that wine at the beginning, it's as if he is pouring water into clay, right, in order to make it into... And in other words, the wine is only acting in order to serve, not, you know, wine for drinking, but only to help, let's say, make it into a better container. Okay? So Rav Papa said, Shma Mino, Mid Rav Zavid. So in other words, he says, from what Rav Zavid said over here, I understand that, Hai, Oved Kecholim, the idolater, the Shadow Chabra, the Vei Milchid in Israel, he pours wine, notice over here the meaning of chamer is wine, right, into a salt shaker that belongs to a Jew, sorry, it's still permissible. Why is it permissible? because he's only pouring a drop into it for whatever crazy reason he puts it into the salt. Okay?
And there's not salt in it. There's right. just a container that had, it was a container that held salt.
Yeah, well, we assumed, I mean, you know, somehow or other, I mean, there was still, let's say, the taste of salt in it or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, they say the salt is permitted.
Right. So, Matzkev lo Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi disagrees with that. He says, Mi nami hosab ka'ozo le'yibud, ochle ka'ozo le'yibud. He says, no, we're talking about two different cases. What is the case? It says, in one case, okay, what we're pouring in is going to be lost, okay?
You're still talking about the salt
right.
container.
Right. Okay. What he wants to say is that the wine, if it's poured into the skin, then what? It's going to be absorbed. Whereas if you pour it in into the salt shaker, according to Rashi, then it's not going to be absorbed. The salt will still keep its own taste and not be affected by the wine. Whereas in the other case, the wine will definitely affect the container that into which it has been poured. Okay? Okay. Baradi Taya. There was an Arab by the name of Baradi. Taya means an Arab. It really means like a Bedouin or something, somebody who travels from one place to another. Taya.
It's
Arabic. It's Arabic.
It's a good Arab.
Right. So, Baradi, the Arab, he says, right? Let's see, we'll get up to all the library. Right. And, no, what else he did?
Rama
Bahu Khamra. And he poured wine into it. And then Rinha Nihale. And then he gave it back to Rav Yitzchak. Okay? So also Shul of Eved Rasha. So Rav Yitzchak came and he asked the Shaila in the yeshiva, what shall I do? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu said to him, Ka chayra Rabbi Ami. This is the teaching that Rabbi Ami gave, halacha l'maaser, the practical decision, he said. Mimalon mayim, what you should do with the skin flask is, you fill it with water, right? Shlosha yomin, right? For 3 days, and then you pour it out. The Yom HaRova, Rava adds, he says, Sorach l'aron, you have to pour them out me'es le'es every 24 hours. Now, what does that remind you of? Kashering glassware that's used for drinking before Pesach. Exactly. That's the principle. This is where it's derived from. This is where it's derived from. Right. Okay, so I think I'll stop on that happy note.
Where are we today?
Okay, tonight is the 13th of July in the year 2005. We're continuing right now in Avodah Zarah, Lamed Gimel Omed Aleph at the bottom of the page, the last 8 lines on the page, and then we'll continue, of course, on the next side, but Lamed Gimel Omed Beis. That's 33A and 33B we'll
right.
be working on tonight. Okay. So the Gemara says from this, he reasoned as follows. He says, this is our practice, but others have a different practice. Okay? So he also Rabin. So when Rabin came, so Amar Rab Shimon and Lakish, he said in the name of Rab Shimon and Lakish, when it says that he came, it means that he came from Eretz Yisrael to Babylonia to tell them, you know, about all the good stuff that he had learned in the yeshivas in Eretz Israel. Okay? So he's quoting now Rav Shimon ben Lakish, who was, of course, one of the primary authorities in, you know, in Eretz Israel. Okay? Yeah. And what did he have to say? So he says, Echod Shalonu V'Echod Shalohem, which means simply that it doesn't make any difference. We're really in agreement about this. Okay? So we have Akob Red.
You're saying it's no difference between
right. That,
the
Israel and the authorities of the Babylonian.
That's what you're talking about.
Right. So we have Akob Red. So Rav Acha, the son of Rava, said, Kameh the Rav Ashi, says the name. In other words, he says, does it mean that Ani merely noidos about Konkanim? Well, question is, are we saying that noidos, which are the skin flasks, right, have one rule, whereas, let's say, the small jars, right, Kankanim, they have a different rule. Omale Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi said, Loish no noidos, the Loish no Kankanim. Makes no difference whether they are skin flax or whether they are containers. The rule is the same. Namely, what we said before, that you can make them kosher by, you know, immersing them, you know, for 3 days. Right.
Do that with a leather flask?
Huh?
You do that with a leather flask, too?
Apparently, yes.
Yeah.
I don't drink from wood, so I don't know.
Put liquid wine in the flask.
Right. Yeah, but right. Leather has a tendency to
absorb.
Absorb.
Well, that's why there's a difference of opinion.
When it gets
right.
Wet, yes.
It's a difference of opinion. But he comes to the conclusion that the same rule will apply.
So I have a question. Didn't they say something about finishing the inside of that leather so that it did not absorb the wine?
Well, that's by putting in the zephyrs, putting in the pitch inside.
Yeah, right.
Right. And then
they
you add wine to it, it sort
leather.
Of ages it or something and makes it...
treated the leather so that the wine...
Right, so that comes on later. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So the wine would...
Yeah.
Wouldn't get absorbed.
Right. Okay. Don't rub on it. Kankanim shaloi de kechovim chadoshim givudim mutorim yeshonim popim asur. Alright, so what does he say? He says over here that the containers that the idolaters have used, right? So what about them? Not so much that they've used this. In this case, we're talking if it's chadoshim. If they're brand new, right?
Right.
And gerudin, in other words, that they're smooth on the inside, then in that case, mutarin, a Jew is permitted to use them. Okay? But yeshonin, if, however, the container is an old one, umizupofit, and it has pitch inside of it, as we said, I mean, in order to make it, you know, more watertight, right? So, they are prohibited. Oivei kechovim leisin nesechen yayin, right? So, if the goy puts in wine in them, Yisrael leisin nesechen mayim, right? And the Jew puts in water inside of them, okay? In other words,
well, that's the question that's
right. Yeah, so let's take a look at the Rashi for a second. Okay. He says, Oved Kechovim. He says, Klomer. For example, in other words, he says, Nosal Nesechon Oved Kechovim Yayin. Right? The Goy put in wine into them, right? And Yisrael Nosal Nesechon Shosha Yamim Mayim. Normally, it's less, right? And the Jew fills it with water for 3 days, as we've said, changing the water every 24 hours and so on and so forth, right? Okay? So what did we say before? We said that in such a case, it would be permissible, right? Okay. So now let's consider another possibility. Oivet kechovim noisein lesechen yayin. Let's say that the goy puts water into the container, right? And Yisrael noisein lesechen tziramorias. And the Jew then puts into the container either Tiris, brine, right? Or Murius, which as I told you, this is a, it's like a fish hash, but highly, highly spiced. Okay? So, in that particular case, the Einer Choshesh, and he's not even worried that, you know, it becomes treif as a result of it. So, in other words, what do we see from the last book? That besides the fact that, you know, you can make it kosher by pouring water into it, if a Jew fills it instead with brine or with esmurius, so it would be the same as if he had put water in.
If you put water in, you have to put for 3 days.
Right. Whereas this would be enough just to do it, and then you could. Right, exactly. Right. So
my question here, before we even go further, wouldn't that affect the taste of anything that went into it?
Yeah, probably it would.
I mean,
but maybe people got a kick out of it. Maybe people get a kick out of it. Maybe they get a kick out of it. I don't know. I mean, Rashi says, miyat, he says. In other words, immediately it becomes kosher if you have the tzir of the Murias, right? Afal pi shelo miluhu mayim, even though he didn't pour water into it, says Rashi. The fisha tzir of Murias sofin es hayayin hanivla mechalen oso, he says, because this brine, well, this Murius, right, is so sharp that it burns the wine that was already absorbed inside the, you know, the container. So, Gemara says, Ibor Elohu, the question was then raised, and now we go to the next slide. Lechatchilo ol dievet. Rashi already gave us the answer, but the Gemara didn't give us the question yet. I got an answer for you, says Rashi. Ask me a shayla. Ask me a kash. It says lechatchilo ol dievet. Does it mean that you can do it without, you know, hesitation? Because it's perfectly okay.